let's get to it. Just believe. Just believe. Just believe.
In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents the authentically entertaining voice of truth and inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with the always unforgettable, ever insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys, as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. Good for all and all for good. And now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Welcome to Life Changes, and welcome to another year, a new year, and a very exciting new year for that matter. We've said it before, and we'll say it again, that we have great expectations for this year, and I believe that the greater expectations we have, the more we have an opportunity to fulfill, if not all, then at least some of those expectations. My father used to say, shoot for the stars, and if you don't reach them, at least you land on a tree. But if you shoot for the tree, you'll never make the stars for sure. So I'm shooting for the stars this year and hoping the same for all of us, including our country. And to that end, our guest today, Marianne Williamson, is, I know, shooting for the stars for our country by running for Congress of the United States of America and bringing to the conversation something that in a way seems like it has not been in the conversation of politics, but as we will talk about later, maybe has been there since the beginning and since been clouded over. I have had a renewed consciousness of something that I used to think about growing up. And interestingly enough, I remember hearing a quote by Albert Einstein, who said, supposedly, that quote-unquote World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. Now, that's presuming that there would be a World War IV, and for that matter, a World War III. And I would like to respectfully disagree with Albert Einstein. And here is why. Supposedly, even Albert Einstein himself, at one point, believed that the atom could never be split. And then it was. And he supposedly was in some way a part of that happening as well, the science at the time, etc. So when it was split, and supposedly this is why he said that World War IV would be fought with sticks and stones, because the power that was unleashed was so great that if that were to be unleashed even more so than it was at the end of World War II, that it would kill the majority of civilization and we would be back to like the caveman days. And if we decided to do a war at that time, we would have to fight it with sticks and stones because we would not have the technology available to us at that time after pretty much annihilating all of what we had developed. So here's my thought on that. My thought and why I disagree. Because I go back to, let's see, in the caveman days, when wars were fought with sticks and stones, there was a time when after the sticks and stones were used, somebody came up with a catapult and throwing or lugging a big iron ball or a coconut, whoever knows what it was, the first one, at their enemies or opponents. And so that caught their opponents by surprise, and they never would have thought of that. But now that it had been thought of, the next time there was a war, the catapult was something that they all used. As a matter of fact, they did that, and then somebody came up with guns that surprised the opponent at the time. And then after the guns, that became norm, and everybody was using guns, and then somebody came up with a bomb. And so it proceeded like this until what we know of as World War II, where the atom bomb and the hydrogen bomb, et cetera, that was deployed. And then that brought everything to a stop. And it changed the face of war, and it changed the face of the planet and our understanding of what we are capable of doing. And that is destroying ourselves with this kind of technology. And so Einstein is referring to that, saying with this kind of technology, we can and will destroy ourselves if we have another war. And this is where I disagree. If Einstein himself didn't think that the atom could be split, there may be something else that Einstein didn't think of. And there may be something else that we don't know of that can be done that could potentially be even stronger than the atom bomb to win a war. I know, for example, if I personally were in a fight right now, I'm not a great fighter with my hands. And if I were to choose to use sticks and stones or guns and or maybe even make a bomb, I know for a fact that right now, with my resources and my ability, I cannot make a bomb big enough or strong enough that can out-bomb any of the technology that any of the countries have right now. So would I just sink into a defeatist attitude? No, I personally believe that there is a quote-unquote bomb that just might be stronger and more powerful than anything that we have ever seen. And I believe that that is love. Now, to some, that might sound absolutely ridiculous, but to probably most of the people that were fighting World War II, if somebody has said to them, there is a bomb greater than anything that we're fighting with that could completely change the face of this conflict right now, a lot of people wouldn't believe it. And yet there was. And if even Einstein didn't think the atom could be split, and then it was, well then, maybe love is even more powerful. And if we, quote, fought this next war with love, potentially it would change the face of civilization forever. And World War IV would never have to be. And so to that end, when we come back, I believe that we have somebody on the line with us who has the potential to bring love into this political conversation when we come back with Marianne Williamson on Life Changes with Filippo.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWay's ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWay's ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWay's water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWay's water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. Are you achieving your highest potential? Do you know what that looks like? Louise Ashby Life Coaching makes it a mission to bring balance and abundance to every area of your life, giving you the opportunity to do and be all that you've dreamed. Anything is possible if you just believe. Contact author and motivational speaker Louise Ashby for your complimentary session and see if her individualized style is for you. You can email Louise at louiseashby.org. That's LOUISEASHBY.org or telephone 323-592-3181. That's Louise at louiseashby.org or telephone 323-592-3181. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back, and we have our guest with us today. And as mentioned before, she is not only a New York Times bestselling author many times over, a speaker, a spiritual leader, a leading woman in the world, so much more that can be said about her. And now, potentially, the future Congresswoman of District 33 in California. Welcome Marianne Williamson to the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Marianne, let's start at the very beginning. Interestingly enough, I was I've been listening to you actually for many, many years, and it's wonderful to be listening to you in this space, which is the political space. And I was wondering when you made the announcement how the two would come together. And it's interesting that I heard you use three words together about politics that I felt like I had never heard before. And that was, you wanted to protect the foundational principles. And you mentioned brotherhood, justice, and love. And I thought, that's beautiful. And I agree with that. And I like that. But I wonder how many other people would agree with it. And ironically, I took me a moment, but then I thought, wait a minute, isn't that kind of like something that Thomas Jefferson wrote in the United States Declaration of Independence, where he said, we hold those truths to be sacred and undeniable, that all men are created equal and independent, that from that equal creation they derive rights inherent and inalienable, among which are the pursuit or the preservation of life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, which was then watered down to something shorter. And I thought, have we come that far that Marianne's words sound so alien to us?
Well, you really put it so well and said so much that matters. You are absolutely right. What I'm talking about should not be considered radical. What I'm talking about is just the basic principles of American democracy, that here in our country, we have sought, and every generation, I think, is a steward of this effort, to create a society where the self-actualization of the individual is supported, that to the best of our ability, we create a society where people can be and do what they want to do as long as it does not hurt other people, that there is a balance between individual liberty and the concern for the common good. And no space is greater for the actualization of that goal than a space of brotherhood, a space of justice, and yes, a space of love. Because if we're not treating each other like brothers, if we're not acting from the highest angels of our nature, then freedom itself can become its own kind of tyranny, because anybody is allowed to do anything. And we have so exalted over the last few decades the rights of a certain segment of our society to run roughshod over the concerns of the average citizen, that we are losing our connection to those basic democratic principles. And I think those of us who are interested in a larger conversation of consciousness and transformation and spirituality and personal growth and recovery and psychotherapy and so forth, we should be the last people sitting out that conversation. We should be leading that conversation. Because if you know what changes one heart, you know what changes the world. Because all that a world is a collection of individuals. So a word like, you know, love even, should not be kept out of the political dialogue. Gandhi didn't keep it out. Martin Luther King didn't keep it out. That without love, nothing really makes sense. And, you know, the thigh bone is connected to the knee bone, and the knee bone is connected to the shin bone. So this idea that there are these discrete categories of conversation, that politics is somehow separate from a larger conversation about who we are in the universe and what our deeper responsibility is, you know, to each other and to the earth, those should not be separate conversations. And the fact that they have become so separate is part of what has corrupted our public discourse.
Well, I commend you for not only what you're saying, but for taking on this mission. And I've heard you say that it is something that you, in a sense, have to do. Why is that? Because certainly you're doing all right, and you're doing good and in the world already. Why this big undertaking, another big undertaking?
Well, you're right. I have a nice life, and I have a nice career. But I do think that we all get to a point in life where what really matters to us are the things that really matter. And if I thought that in this campaign, 2014, in my district, if I thought that there was going to be a robust conversation about the things that I feel matter most, then I wouldn't be running. But I've come to believe that looking to the political status quo to change itself is unreasonable. Mm-hmm. They're not going to create a conversation about changing a status quo that they themselves created. So a real serious conversation about income inequality, a real serious conversation about it in terms not just of quote-unquote fixing it, but really addressing how it got this way to begin with in terms of tax policies and banking policies and trade policies, a real serious conversation about how undue influence of money has turned us into a legalized system of corruption or bribery, a real serious conversation about the fact that we have the second highest child poverty rate in all industrialized nations, second only to Romania, a really serious conversation about how we have the highest incarceration rate in the world, a serious conversation about the fact that while a very few Americans are doing so well, so many Americans are doing not well at all, hardly able to survive above the poverty line or falling into poverty through no fault of their own. You know, when you have 1% of your population controlling 38% of your wealth, this is not just wrong and it's not just undemocratic. I think it's unsustainable. And any narrative of any country in history would indicate that it is unsustainable. So I, as a person who feel that I have been empowered by transformational principles, if anything those principles give us is the ability to speak our minds when our hearts would lead us to. And I think those of us who do believe in deep principles of justice and deep principles of brotherhood and deep principles of love must not be silent right now.
Well, certainly for many millions, of course, you have been in the front lines, sharing your thoughts and ideas and changing the world and some of the way we've thought about things. However, for many more, perhaps you have been on the sidelines, and now you're talking about engaging the system right where it lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't transform a system you refuse to engage. And you're absolutely right. Many of us have been having the right conversation, but we've been having it from the sidelines. And at this point in our history, talking from the sidelines is not enough. Talking on online petitions is not enough. If we are going to make the kind of impact that we want to make right now, we're going to have to start to run candidates and support candidacies and actually win political campaigns that are based on the conversation that so many of us believe, because it is the conversation of the heart, is the only conversation to have. The political status quo will mock first the very conversation it needs the most. Mm. And the fact that this conversation is outside the box, given how toxic it is inside the box, what a good thing this is. And there, you know, I feel in this campaign what I have felt throughout my career. I'm not saying anything that everybody I know isn't saying. I'm just saying it when the microphone is on.
Mm.
I mean, and many Americans are looking around and go, what the heck is going on here? What is all this NSA spying? What is this National Defense Authorization Act that gives the U.S. government the power to detain American citizens indefinitely? What is going on with all this Fukushima radioactive energy that is spewing forth and the government won't even talk to us about it? What is going on here that drones are on their way? What is going on here with the Trans-Pacific Partnership? We're like an alcoholic family system where the kids notice what's going on, but they're afraid to talk about it, and the parents are giving off the energy, don't you talk about it? I mean, if the whole transformational psychotherapeutic conversation has given us anything, it's the realization that a person is as sick as their secrets. Well, a person is as sick as their secrets, mm-hmm. and guess what? So is a country.
Mm. You know, I'm glad to hear you say that you feel you're not saying anything that people you know aren't already saying. And I'm wondering if you're saying the same things that people you don't know are also saying and feeling. And my hope is that they're also in Congress, and that maybe at the moment they're closeted, so to speak, and hopefully by you speaking when the mic is on, they may come out and speak as well.
Well, first of all, I think sometimes we don't realize that there are some really good people in Washington trying their best to put forth some of these things. But it all depends on numbers, you know. If you have just a few congresspeople talking about something, then of course those voices get drowned out by those who are talking about something else. And that's why, not just in my district, but I hope that people all over America will be asking their politicians, what are you going to do about child poverty? What are you going to do about child hunger? What are you going to do about our mass incarceration rate? What are you going to do about getting money out of politics? What are you going to do about the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Because that's what the people who are already trying to have these conversations inside Congress, they need. They need more colleagues who feel supported by their constituents in talking about the same things.
Recently, during these past holidays, I went to visit an animal shelter, and I was happy to see how well the animals were treated, and I wasn't able to enter these beautiful rooms for them unless I first cleansed my hands each time in each different room and all of that, and they were so well cared for, and I thought, I wonder if these were children.
I wonder if these were...
people that were incarcerated, would it be the same?
I'm so glad to hear you say that, and I'm so glad to hear you say that as a man. You better believe it. Even though I'm a great proponent, of course, in animal rights, I've been on an interfaith council with the Humane Society, puppy mills and cockfighting and the way we treat our animals and veganism, all that. This conversation is so important. But I have to tell you something. We need to match our passion about animals these days with our passion about starving babies. We have 17,000 children who starve every day on this planet, 17,000. And I've heard people say, yeah, but animals, it's through no fault of their own. What are you talking about? Like, it's these children's fault that they're starving?
Mm.
You know, we have a billion people on this planet living on a dollar and a quarter and less a day.
Mm.
They're called the bottom billion. And, you know, for $100 billion spent over 10 years, we could eradicate deep poverty from this earth. We don't do it, however. The problem, you know, people say, you know, I wrote a book, my last book, The Law of Divine Compensation, before the one that's coming out tomorrow, actually.
Right.
I talked about how the only real problem is a lack of love. And somebody wrote to me and said, what? You know, what, some starving child, the problem was their lack of love? I said, well, the problem was definitely a lack of love, but not theirs, ours.
Mm.
You know, when we spend $800 billion a year on our military budget, And I do not believe that number is in direct proportion to a serious analysis of how safe we are because I think if we were really putting our safety first, we would spend way more of that money on doing the real peace-building things, such as increasing economic opportunity for women and educational opportunities for children around the world. So, you know, all of these things need to be discussed, and the fact that we are not, you know, and until we know this as individuals, until we intend to create a peaceful world, until we intend to create the world we want, we shouldn't be so surprised that that's not the world that is unfolding around us.
Mm. One of the most powerful things that struck me that you said, and though I've resonated with so much of what you've said over the years, I was surprised actually that something like this struck me the way it did when you talked about when women are pregnant, they say they eat for two. And you said American women are speaking for 10, if not more, people around the world. And I think about the conversations that I have on radio and I have on video and when I'm being interviewed and all that. And I'm thinking now, after you said that, how many people am I speaking for? And let me be even more cognizant of what I say.
Exactly.
So thank you.
Exactly. You have a tremendous responsibility when you're on the media. A tremendous responsibility. Not everybody has that microphone that you have. And I think that that was part of why I decided to run. I thought I have been blessed over the years with a platform. And at this point in my life, how can I use that platform in the highest, best way? And I felt at this point, I did have a responsibility to do whatever I could to use this platform to speak most powerfully. And as we were saying before, not just from the sidelines, about some of these issues that speak to the unnecessary suffering of millions of people. You can't say that you're conscious, but remain selectively conscious. I'm conscious about food. I'm conscious about nutrition. I'm conscious about relationship. But then say, but I'm not conscious about politics. Well, then you're not really conscious. You can't be just awake in some places. So I feel that for those of us who feel we have some platform, have a voice, and have any spiritual understanding at all, we should be the first people, not the last people, addressing in very powerful ways, with real political heft, the unnecessary suffering of people throughout the world.
Mm. Mm. You talk about transformational politics. What a great word. And you also say that it needs to involve all of us. Obviously, you've alluded to that. But the word transformational, I like that. How are you applying it here?
Well, I think that we're in the process of making the same kind of transition in politics that we made several decades ago in medicine, when we moved from an allopathic medical model where you just look to somebody else to treat the symptoms of a problem on the level of the effect and hope it works, to an integrative model where we knew that the whole person was involved and needed to be involved both in the creation of health as well as in the amelioration of illness if and when it occurred. So it is that we now have a very allopathic model of politics. We don't cultivate the health of the society. We abide by all kinds of unhealthy things, and then which have to do with that lack of brotherhood, lack of justice, lack of love. Mm. And then when all these horrible problems emerge, we look to the allopathic healer, i.e. the politicians, to just treat the problem on the level of effect.
Mm.
So just as we know now that we are responsible for cultivating the health of our bodies, we are also responsible for cultivating the health of our society. And that is the conversation that we need to be having. And just as you don't get sick and then just not take care of your body and then hope that the doctor will fix it, we now have to move into a new level of understanding that citizenship matters. You can't just wait till these horrible, horrible problems arise and then vote for this person or vote for that person. Democracy is broken not just in Washington, but inside all of our heads, all of our hearts. So the transformational rather than the transactional model is where I'm saying to another to a voter, not simply, you know, vote for me and I'll do this or that for you, but rather let us together take responsibility for the places in our society where things are broken, and together create a healing. That's transformational.
That's transformational indeed. You know, thinking back on some of the work that I've done, of which you have been a part of for me, I'm thinking how in dealing with children, in dealing with issues of their parents as they've grown up and seen that their parents made mistakes. Now, arguably, some parents did certain things on purpose because they were sick or they thought that was fun or funny or something to do to children. But for the most part, I think parents actually are trying to do the best they can and are doing just that, the best they can. And if we now have grown up because of that and now know better, it is up to us to make that change and make it better. And so in politics, having this conversation with you, I'm looking at that as an analogy saying, yes, maybe some people have purposely done things to hurt others, but maybe that's not the majority. Maybe it's a minority and it doesn't really matter at this point. If we know better or we want better, it is up to us.
Well, I think the majority of people, not only in the United States, but around the world, are good, decent people. I mean, I think the vast majority of people are wonderful. The problem is, both here and around the world, how too many times the government is expressing not the higher, better angels of our nature, but actually the lower forces among us, the shadow face. You know, just like an individual has shadows they need to take responsibility for. So does the nation. And right now, we have developed in our country a situation in which shadows way too often rule. And greed is a shadow, making short-term economic gain the bottom line, even at the expense of other people, at the expense of children, at the expense of the common good. That is a shadow face. And so what we have now is not, the problem is not that people aren't decent. The problem is that too many policies of our government aren't decent. You know, when you don't even have air quality safety standards in your American public schools, and 40% of our public school teachers and students are already known to be adversely affected by this, then the problem is not that the American people, it's not the people. I think the average American doesn't know the statistic I just told you. But the problem is that because children do not work, they do not wield financial leverage. And we have developed a situation over the last 50 and 60 years in which financial leverage is able to influence our political functioning in a way that is way disproportionate to that wielded by the average citizen. So moneyed interests carry their short-term economic goals carry the day, even at the expense of the health of our children, even at the expense of the health of our food, even at the expense of the health of our environment, even at the expense of a necessary, huge amount of unnecessary suffering. We have even the highest mass incarceration rate in the world. We have 2.4 million people in prison. That's a higher rate than any other country in the world. We have 5% of the population of the world, 25% of the prison population. Now, the issue is not just that this is a moral scourge, which I believe it is. The issue is that I don't even think the average American knows that. Because I have a belief, I have a faith in the average American. I think the average American has a conscience. I think the average American would hear that and go, oh my God, I had no idea. Well, but the political status quo, which should be the keeper of our story, is actually the institutional corner that is making sure we're not having that conversation, which is the actually veil of obfuscation. They're not having it because there's no money to be made there. In fact, there's money to be made by prison building, which is our single largest urban industry. I mean, this thing is dark. We got some real dark stuff we've got to talk about in order to deliver ourselves. And people who have the psychotherapeutic and spiritual sophistication to know that, we should be leading this, and that's why I'm running.
I have such great hopes and expectations for this, much like you said about the speaking for 10 or whoever knows how many hundreds or thousands or millions. But the world does seem to look at America, California, and maybe even Los Angeles specifically because of Hollywood and many other factors. And so with you being in Congress, I believe that the world would notice.
Well, California is known for starting new things. California is known for starting new conversations and setting new trends. And as much as people might laugh at that sometime, something starts in California, within 5 years, it's a buzz throughout the country. And I'm saying that to people in my district, that who but us would possibly be a better place to say we're not going to do it the way it's been done. We're going to have a new conversation now. And I think that's part of what California contributes to this country and to this world. And the fact that we're having a conversation here that's outside the box is the good news, because the box is toxic, toxic, toxic.
It is a great news indeed, and especially and very much aligned with what you've said in the past. Life is not what we have, it is what we are. And we certainly do have a lot, though some of us might not think that, especially here in California. We have a lot, and yet who are we? And that's something that I believe you have always made us look at. And now it's time to look at it on a grander scale.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's the difference between taking an individual journey and moving it to including your paradigm into a collective journey as well. Principles that we know transform our individual lives. And then if we collaborate with each other and have this conversation collectively, what we will be able to do to transform our societies and even transform our world is astonishing if we allow ourselves to actually think about it and do it.
Actually, before we go on for a few more minutes here, I know we have limited time with you, and we're grateful that we're here together. I want to remind everybody that they, of course, could go to your regular website, but there is a new website that's up and running, fast and furiously flying, I should say, Marian for Congress, and it's spelled just like it sounds, MarianForCongress.com, Marian for Congress. And also, do you want to take a moment to talk about the book that's coming out tomorrow?
Oh, I would love to. Thank you. I have a book called A Year of Miracles, Daily Devotions and Reflections, which is being published tomorrow, and people can find out more about that at marianne.com. And I wrote it, you know, it began as something I was writing for myself, because while a political campaign is talking about what's happening externally, the real balanced life is one in which we are focused on both the internal and the external. And I believe the more you are grounded in spirit, the more you're able to soar in the world. If you want to fly powerfully in the world, ground yourself deeply in your inner life. And so this book has 365 devotions and reflections, so that every morning, you know, sometimes we wake up in the morning, we take a shower or a bath because we don't want to take yesterday's dirt out into the day on our bodies. But if we don't take time for the mindfulness, for the reflection, for the inspiration, prayer, and so forth in the morning, then you might be washing the dirt off your body, but you're not releasing the stress from your mind. And I think purifying our minds and hearts in the morning is as important as washing the dirt off our bodies. And that's why I wrote the book, first of all, for myself, and then somebody said, well, you know, other people would like to have this too. And I went, okay. And so here it is for those of us who would like it.
Well, Marian, you have been known to say that every life is a platform, and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, wow, what a platform. And what even greater a platform are you setting up for yourself and the planet here with this?
Well, I hope so. I hope that my campaign, and particularly this will be true if I win this campaign, will create a space of possibility for many people. I think a lot of people right now, when they think of running for office, they think, oh, there's no place for an independent candidacy, you know, talking about these issues in the context of a larger moral universe. Why would I even try? But I think that in winning this campaign, we will create a greater sense of possibility among a lot of people. This is not just about me. It's about a whole movement among us of what's possible in the political domain.
Well, I personally know many of your supporters, and some of them are in high places, and I trust that there are also some, like I mentioned before, quote-unquote closeted supporters who will be anonymously voting if they need to for now and then someday can come out and actually say, I voted for her.
Well, you know, we have a secret ballot in the United States for a reason. I think everybody should simply vote their heart. And when it comes to the ballot box, as long as we count the votes, we are equal. And I'm not speaking to rich people or poor people. I'm speaking to Americans. And that's what's important. Our politics should not be about rich people or poor people. Our politics should be about Americans. And our preserving and fostering a government of the people, by the people, for the people, particularly at a time when we've become a government of a few of the people, by a few of the people, for a few of the people, is important for all of us. Because if we continue in this direction of a government of a few of the people, by a few of the people, and for a few of the people, things won't go well for a few of the people either. So I think that the awakened heart, which is the best of people, not just Americans, but of anyone, has a lot to think about right now and a lot to do. And I hope that people will feel that this campaign is a container for the kinds of values and principles and purposes that conversation brings forth.
Well, this conversation, your move has not only created a potential for a greater conversation within Congress, but it has certainly sparked a conversation throughout many of the groups that I belong, and also it has inspired many people. I know you've inspired many women and many people throughout, and you're a champion of that kind of inspiration, and this is just yet another major step. And so once again, I commend you for that and thank you.
Well, thank you. It makes me very happy to hear that you've heard the conversation elsewhere. And that is what will change this country, a buzz. You know, when Americans get on to something, you know, we are known throughout the world. It's a characterological trait that sometimes we remain in a stupor for a long time. Sometimes we remain distracted for a long time. Sometimes we remain disengaged for a long time. But boy, when we wake up, there's nothing we can't do. And I feel that starting to happen, and it makes me very happy to hear that you hear it too. And if we can just really put, you know, the pedal to the metal here and really just increase it, everybody sharing about this on their social media, talking to their friends, talking about it in their groups, donating as they feel that they can comfortably do, encouraging others, coming to hear my campaign events, going on to MarianneForCongress.com, being part of it. We can do something beautiful here. I'm absolutely sure of it.
MarianneForCongress.com. Well, Marianne, I've gotten to hear you speak live, and I know that on occasion you've mentioned that before you enter a room, you blast them with love. And so I'm looking forward to the day that before you enter that big building in Washington, D.C. as Congresswoman, that you'll be blasting them with love and really setting the place ablaze with love.
And you know what? Why don't we both, and everybody listening, you know, we can do that right now. That's what's missing in this country. We're not blasting our country with love. We're not blasting our government with love. We're not blasting our world with love. And some people would say, well, that's a silly thing to even say. But those of us who know that it's not a silly thing to say need to be saying a whole lot more right now.
Marianne, you are so great with closing comments, or as sometimes you refer them to as prayers and all that. I'm wondering if we can include a blast in some closing comments by you today.
I said earlier that I think some things have gone wrong. We have swerved from our ethical center, both in our government and in our economic system. But the narrative of American history is that we have swerved from our better selves many times before. After all, we had the genocide of Native Americans. We had slavery. We had the oppression of women and so forth. But the larger narrative of American history is that we have always tended in time to self-correct. So this is not a time for cynicism. Cynicism is just an excuse for not helping. This is an excuse. This is a time, I mean, for a very sober analysis within ourselves about some very serious problems in this country. But in order to take our place with a great historical narrative and lineage of Americans saying we will now do what we need to do to make things right, and let us not be the first generation to wimp out on the fundamental role of making things right when they have gone wrong. And I know that, you know, there's something very, very, very powerful about the fact that our founders put the power of the governance of this nation in the hands of the individual citizen. That's you and me. And we need to stop treating politics like a spectator sport. We need to stop leaving all this into the auspices of a political class. If there's going to be an interruption, a pattern interruption at this time, if there's going to be an intervention on the patterns of recklessness and irresponsibility that now dominate our political functioning, it's going to be because we, the people of the United States, make that interruption happen, make that intervention. And I know for myself, when I think about this, it's very sobering, but in a way it's thrilling, because sometimes in life, life calls on you. And sometimes you go, whoa, I'm not ready. But whenever you feel life calling on you, I've always felt like the universe felt I was readier than I thought I was. And this is simply the age in which we live. It's the responsibility of our time. And I think all of us really, if we're honest with ourselves, are longing for a life of greater significance anyway. And for anybody who does resonate with this and does support my campaign in whatever way, helping me get the word out, helping support it, I promise, you know, just like with you, I'm very grateful that you have me on. I'm very grateful that you have given me this opportunity to share my voice. And I take this very seriously, and I'm honored by any support, and I'm really committed to you and to your listeners that with whatever support I'm given, I will do my very best to create a campaign that you're proud of, that you're proud to have supported. And if I have the honor and privilege of winning, I will do my very best to really stand in a powerful way on everything I'm talking about in the campaign.
Marion, I feel that. Marion for Congress, marionforcongress.com. It has been an honor and a privilege, and I look forward to interviewing you again someday as Congresswoman. Until such time,
much
love.
God bless you.
Are you like many people who want to make positive changes and improvements in your life and in the world around you? Do you ever feel like there's something holding you back from achieving your true potential? Join Stefan and Shaylee Schifeitel with the Tad James Company, the world's largest NLP, coaching, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy training institute. Get ready for a life-changing experience that will give you the tools to transform your life through positive change and will help you create the future you want now. Their training programs are designed to provide you with the revolutionary knowledge, skills, and techniques necessary to effectively create long-lasting and life-changing effects. Discover more about neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy at www.nlpcoaching.com or call 888-440-4823. That's 888-440-4823.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
I venture to say we are changed after that conversation with Marion Williamson, potentially the next Congresswoman of the 33rd District of California for the United States of America. And we are here with our producer, Mark Legere, for our producer's wrap. Mark, after all that, where do you stand?
I've been a fan of Marion for some time, but I stand more inspired, engaged, and excited about generally this topic of politics and the pursuit of happiness and the pursuit of progress than I think I've ever been.
I've heard Marian say that politics affect every area of our lives, and therefore it's important. And most of us aren't involved because we feel that we can't affect it, or that it's corrupt and it can't be changed, or whatever we feel. And I'm not feeling that right now.
This is exactly what I'm referring to. The reality is, and I have allowed myself to fall victim to it for most of my life, is that the last point that you brought up, where I think people see the kind of the egoic tug of war, the constant statement of intent, which is never matched by follow through, not often matched by follow through. And then so many times, especially, you know, I came out of the private sector where I spent most of my career, and I've talked to some very smart people who have always largely said that they would not pursue a life in politics because, of course, they could make more money in the private sector, but also because they didn't just trust the environment.
Mm.
And when you have, you know, some of the, not necessarily even the smartest people, but yet the people of most integrity that were saying this, I think it really is a nod to the courage that Marian has in stepping forward. And more importantly, I think the general inspiration that is being led by her, and I now know of other people kind of in a similar space or of a similar mindset that are stepping forward, as people are, these leaders now are coming forward to kind of take back control in terms of an uncorruptible force that could potentially move into the political arena.
You know, I'm inspired by that as well, as you're saying it, and it's reminding me that there were things that people believed that were criticized, and then they became known as truth later on. And we hold those people in high regard, and yet at the time they were not held in such high regard. And so I'm wondering if one can almost have the foresight to say, yes, it's okay that you ridicule me right now, because someday you won't, and you'll praise me, and I'll take it, because I know where it's headed.
I love that. I love that thought. I love that mindset. And
it's
knowing,
not easy.
Well, it isn't easy, and knowing where it's headed is one thing. But you know, I have the good fortune of having my son here with me today as we record this show. And I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking about everything that both you and Marian discussed, and the values that we stand for, and what Life Changes is about. And then I think of how the decision-making authorities have swayed so far, you know, based on profit. And, you know, I think of the overlaps in terms of certain senators and congresswomen who are directly involved with certain companies that have such massive lobbies. And then I step back and I look at him and I thought, boy, what would it be like if we all thought of our kids first in terms of making any decisions rather than thinking of profit or personal gain? And I think that's part of what the backbone of who Marian is and what she is about and what we discussed today is really saying.
You know, I like that, Mark. And like Marian said, there are so many good people in Congress. There are many good people, and I believe many more good people than people who might be sick, actually. However, even those good people, I think to myself, don't you have children? And many of them do. And I think, do you not realize that the decisions you're making is going to affect not only you in this generation, but generations to come? And what I am realizing, potentially part of the problem, is that we have been split and don't even know it, because business is business. you know, money talks and bullshit walks, and all of these phrases, and the way we've been raised to believe that there is a certain way you act out there, and then there's a certain way you act in here, and it's, wait a minute, that's the same person, and the same person lives in the same world. It's kind of like, you know, you shouldn't right outside your house. It's still going to smell inside whether you realize it or not.
Well, I hadn't thought of that analogy. But
neither had I. I wish I had.
but that being said, I think it even goes, you and I were starting to head down a similar path from different directions. And that is that when not only the business, the way we're brought up and the separation between business and relations, but I think it goes even deeper, and that's the bifurcation between childhood and adulthood. You know, we reach a point where, you know, there most religions, most cultures have a protective barrier around children to a certain extent. Obviously, some more than others, but to a certain extent, at least up until certain ages. You know, there's an innocence there that everyone seems to respect. But once you get to a certain age and are willing to make decisions, they kind of forego that. And we forget realizing that we're all those kids. We're still all those children. We're the same people. We're the same thing. And yet, yes, we're responsible for our decisions. But at the same time, we stop looking at each other. We stop caring. And we start to you know, kind of compartmentalize the decisions that are being made as it gets into the competitive energy that is of adulthood. And I think if we really went back and started looking at each and every person as an individual that needs to be cared for, nurtured, and you know, then it really gets into bigger topics like the way certain correctional matters are handled in other countries, certain other countries that really look towards rehabilitation rather than imprisonment. And because I think everything comes from a lack of love, and that's where the conversation started out with Marion.
You know, it's interesting. I've said recently that we use the word humane for animals when it's not really the right word, because animals are not humans. There is the right word to use that is a way of taking care of animals that is appropriate and kind and loving and gentle. However, we use the word humane, and that's fine, except that humane is no longer humane to humans, which is interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. I think humane and a lot of these words have really fallen out of context of even an awareness or an understanding by the greater populace. People have become, you know, quite disconnected. Many have become quite disconnected from even the meaning of these words and a true understanding of what it is like to act that way. But yet there is a whole other percentage that is waking up and that is remembering, acknowledging, embracing, and becoming more humane, or other words that that represent similar belief patterns.
You know, Mark, talk about life changes. When we started Life Changes together many years ago, never thought we would be having a political conversation. And ironically, life changed, and we are having a political conversation. The best part of it is, it doesn't feel "quote unquote" political.
Well said. Well said. So true. And you know, there goes to the circle of life and the fact that we are all connected, and they can't be separate. They can't be recognized as separate. And so you just validated my point in terms of, you know, as you started saying, so many people putting politics aside because they felt they couldn't understand it, or they just saw the corruption on both sides, or they felt like they couldn't make a difference. And I think this very point is why it's so powerful and so great that Marianne's running. And I think she's going to be an inspiration to many. And I sure hope she wins.
Well, I'm sure glad we had her on the show today and had this conversation, all three of us, and actually more than the three of us, because I know many people have been involved in already her campaign, and for all of those that are going to be listening to this and sharing this or talking about it, pros and cons and yes buts and ands hopefully, and this and this and this, and let's add to the conversation with positive thoughts and joy and love, and looking forward to seeing more of this kind of conversation even here on Life Changes with Filippo. So with that, again, it seems and still feels like a happy new year. Happy new year to all. And thank you all for being a part of this. And remember, I am Filippo Voltaggio saying, as life changes, we're here for you. Ciao.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world.